a lot of undemocratic leaders seized on it and used it as an opportunity to consolidate power.
Democracy takes a hit. It's Tuesday, March 9th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, some COVID restrictions loosened, restricting votes, fighting child trafficking, looking to the stars, and preserving protest art. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Nearly 75% of the world's population lives in countries where freedom is declining, including in the United States. That's according to a new report by the Washington-based research and advocacy group Freedom House. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swara has more on the Democratic backsliding.
From Indian farmers' protests to clashes between law enforcement and supporters of Black Lives Matter. The world's two largest democracies, the United States and India, are part of a global trend showing a decline in democratic policies and institutions, according to the Freedom of the World 2021 annual report by Freedom House. The Washington-based think tank focuses on democracy and human rights around the world.
The pandemic has really exacerbated this long-term democratic decline. A lot of undemocratic leaders seized on it and used it as an opportunity to consolidate power.
Freedom House's report rates people's access to political rights and civil liberties in 210 countries and territories. In 2020, 45 more countries had declining scores compared to those with improving ones, a trend that has continued for the past 15 years. The United States is still considered free but fell 3 points since last year, a large drop for an established democracy and mostly driven by lack of transparency under the Trump administration.
One way this manifested was the dismissal of inspectors general and the undermining of other institutions that are meant to hold government leaders accountable. But the kind of second part of this is the pandemic. It really showed this disregard for transparency. The federal government and also some state governments propagated false or misleading information. They obscured pandemic-related data and just generally caused a lot of confusion and politicized the response.
This democratic erosion is not new. The U.S. has fallen 11 points in the past decade. Noting the siege of the U.S. Capitol by Trump supporters earlier this year, on Wednesday, Secretary of State Antony Blinken underscored the need to bolster democratic institutions.
Americans are increasingly polarized, and the institutions that exist to help us manage our differences so our democracy can continue to function are under strain. Shoring up our democracy is a foreign policy imperative. Otherwise, we play right into the hands of adversaries and competitors like Russia and China.
Less than 20% of the world population now lives in a free country, the lowest since 1995, according to Freedom House. India had the biggest drop since last year. Its status declined from free to partly free due to a multi-year pattern of Hindu nationalist policies and violence against Muslim minorities. Patsy Whitaker-Swara, VOA News.
You'll find more on this when you follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia and Facebook at VOA Asia. Stop by our voanews.com website as well. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. After containing COVID, East Asia lags on vaccines. Hong Kong leader says electoral reforms could delay elections further. Early signals to North Korea seen as key to keeping door open to diplomacy. The United States says all options on table for decision on Afghan military mission. Malala takes her passions to the small screen with Apple. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more on our Facebook page at VOA Asia. And you can visit the website, voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Some states in the U.S. are loosening or lifting COVID-19 restrictions, even as health officials and President Joe Biden warn against it. As VOA's Mariama Diallo reports, the measures by these states are getting mixed reaction.
Michigan and Louisiana are among the states across America loosening COVID-19 restrictions. Both states have eased capacity limits for restaurants and other businesses and are also allowing larger indoor and outdoor gatherings.
The increased capacity limits outlined in this order will still give us the ability to protect public health as we carefully track variants and continue leading with science and data.
In Texas, Governor Greg Abbott is lifting the state's mask mandate, making it the largest state in the U.S. to end that order, which is aimed at preventing the spread of the coronavirus.
Effective next Wednesday, all businesses of any type are allowed to open 100%. That includes any type of entity in Texas. Also, I am ending the statewide mask mandate.
Shopkeepers, restaurant owners, and customers in Texas have mixed reactions.
We're so excited.
I am going to require that all customers do continue to wear a mask, and if they choose not to, or argue with me, then I will very politely ask them to excuse themselves.
Because I'm going to keep my sign up in the window and hope that everybody follows it. Am I going to kick somebody out for not wearing it? No, but I'll probably stay away from them more.
President Joe Biden has warned against lifting the mask mandate at this point.
Texas, I think it's a big mistake. Look, I hope everybody's realized by now these masks make a difference. We are on the cusp of being able to fundamentally change the nature of this disease. And the last thing we need is the Neanderthal thinking that in the meantime, everything's fine, take off your mask, forget it. It still matters.
Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves fired back, saying in a tweet, "Mississippians don't need handlers. I just think we should trust Americans, not insult them." Meanwhile, the top health official at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said the nation is entering critical weeks.
The next 3 months are pivotal. I'm asking you to reach deeply to protect our nation's health and to protect your loved ones. Whether mandated or not, as individuals and as communities, we can still take the right public health action to protect ourselves and others.
She says while cases in the country are leveling off, new COVID variants are emerging, ready to hijack the country's successes as states take steps to return to normal. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, more than 1,000 anti-coup protesters marched in the streets of Mandalay, Myanmar's second biggest city. With security forces blocking major roads, protesters decided to march in the narrow streets of several wards. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us today for VOA Asia. Despite no evidence that widespread voter fraud occurred in the 2020 U.S. presidential election, state lawmakers across the country are pursuing reforms that could change access to ballots and the time period to submit them, among other restrictions. VOA's Kane Faribault has more from the Midwest state of Iowa, one of the first to pass new voting legislation.
More than 2 million Iowans were registered to vote in the 2020 general election, a record in a state with a population of just over 3.1 million. Of 1.7 million ballots cast in the state last November, more than 1 million were submitted through the mail as absentee ballots, also a record, as many voters shunned the polls during a pandemic. Then President Donald Trump, a Republican, won Iowa, but lost the national election to Democrat Joe Biden. Now, Republicans who control Iowa's state legislature have passed a bill limiting early in-person voting and shortening the time allotted for absentee ballot submissions, among other provisions.
But the job of the state government committee is to ensure election integrity. You look at what you did right, what you did wrong, and you make improvements. And that's exactly what we're doing here today.
What Republicans promote as preventing potential voter fraud, Democrats see as voter suppression.
We want to make the freedom to vote as easy as possible for every single Iowa voter. I have many constituents who work multiple jobs, are parents, and they need the flexibility to vote when they have the time.
Democrats failed to eliminate what they viewed as harmful restrictions on voting, and the bill passed the state House and Senate with unified majority Republican backing. Iowa is not alone, and Democrats are sounding the alarm. At a recent hearing in Washington, newly elected Georgia Democratic Senator John Ossoff said legislation advancing in his state would disproportionately deter minority voting.
For example, to end Sunday early voting, which is used heavily by black and working class voters.
Georgia and Iowa are among dozens of states where Republicans seek to rewrite voting laws.
It's pretty widespread, and it's not surprising to me, having worked in this area of voting rights for some time, to see a backlash against a high turnout election.
Michelle Cantor-Cohen is with the Fair Election Center, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization addressing voting rights and election registration reform.
You know, one thing that I think is really telling is that there's no rationale for it being given that makes any sense. I mean, it's not as if there was, for example, a problem with the polls being open until 9 o'clock instead of 8 o'clock. In fact, you know, voters who work a long day may only be able to vote at that time.
Conversely, a lot of things that are meant to objectively suppress the vote have instead angered people and had them show up in record numbers.
Jessica Huseman with VoteBeat, an independent nonpartisan news organization covering election integrity, says not all the proposed reforms are problematic.
There are a lot of states, for example, whose deadlines for requesting absentee ballots were unrealistically close to the election. And so election administrators just didn't have enough time to get those ballots out the door and have voters return them. But there is certainly no reason to change broad swaths of the election system that we have now. You see states that I think are overcorrecting from perceived but not real problems from the 2020 election in order to satisfy the most extreme parts of their base.
Voting reforms in Iowa await the signature of that state's Republican governor, the first in what Huseman says could be a wave of voting changes in multiple states ahead of the 2022 U.S. midterm elections. Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Chicago.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam said the city's government fully welcomes the electoral reforms that have been proposed by Beijing that will increase central government control over local politics. You'll find this and all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, U.S. authorities are highlighting the issue of human trafficking, the exploitation of others for labor or sex work, which often targets children. VOA's Elizabeth Lee shows how law enforcement and social agencies are working together to rescue victims and help them recover.
In foster care and group homes since an early age, a young woman who calls herself Egypt entered the sex trade at 16 at the suggestion of a friend.
She's like, you have a vagina, make some money and live your life. So I was like, okay, I guess.
What followed was a cycle of abuse. A recent law enforcement operation in Los Angeles rescued 33 missing children, 8 of them trafficking victims who, like Egypt, had been sexually exploited. The joint effort, called Operation Lost Angels, involved multiple branches of law enforcement and social service agencies.
Traffickers are very good at figuring out particularly what that vulnerability is, fulfilling that for the child, and then eventually forcing them or coercing them, or even if they're children, it doesn't have to be force, fraud, and coercion, right? They're kids, they're vulnerable.
There are organizations that offer assistance, including Children of the Night. Lois Lee founded the organization.
These children, many were brought up in crack houses. Their parents sold them for drugs. They were molested or raped before they could walk.
Often removed from abusive families, many, like Egypt, were placed in foster homes, temporary settings that sometimes weren't much better. Traffickers and pimps promise a better life. Egypt didn't like the life, but liked the money.
Well, I just made $1,000 within a day, so why not keep doing this? A job doesn't give me $1,000 hand up, so why not keep doing this? Walk around with a new iPhone, hair done, nails done, clothes, and stuff like that.
Hopes were quickly shattered. A friend was murdered. An attack on Egypt could have killed her.
Luckily, I was like 2 minutes a walk from the police station, ran to the police station. And they were like, what happened? I was like, I really don't remember. All I remember is a crowbar, four people, and then just went out.
Gay teens who are rejected by their families also struggle on the streets. A charity worker recalls a young man in the sex trade.
He was prostituting, like I said, for food to eat and a place to sleep.
Intervention programs help, but those who work with youngsters on the streets say only a comprehensive approach can break the cycle.
We have to resolve a lot of those problems that are in the home. We have to get a handle on drugs. There's just no question about it.
A survivor, Egypt wants to go to college and is hopeful about her future.
Sometimes you're in the darkness, but there's always some type of light at the end of the tunnel.
Lee says her organization helped 500 children last year. Many more are still on the streets, exploited and desperate. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Making headlines in Asia, prosecutors in Thailand charged 18 pro-democracy activists with sedition while lodging additional charges against three of them for defaming the monarchy during protests in September 2020. The charges followed similar legal action taken against other protest leaders last month. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, astronauts aboard the International Space Station have built the bones for much-needed power upgrades. Also, SpaceX took flight, and without success, and flaming space junk lighted up Australian skies. VOA's Arash Arabasadi brings us The Week in Space.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Thursday started with a bang for the private spaceflight company SpaceX. Roaring upwards from a launch pad in Florida's Cape Canaveral, a Falcon 9 rocket took off carrying 60 satellites. SpaceX confirmed their deployment on Twitter. The satellites will continue forming the company's Starlink orbiting internet service. Astronomers have complained the satellites block the view of anything beyond them.
2, 1, ignition. We have liftoff.
A successful launch comes on the heels of a not-so-successful mission Wednesday in Boca Chica, Texas. There, SpaceX launched its Starship prototype that flew 10 kilometers before landing. But when the Starship landed and after the SpaceX live stream ended, it exploded. The failure came just 2 minutes after SpaceX celebrated the win. Yet the company's successes included numerous trips to the International Space Station, where this week NASA's Kate Rubins and Victor Glover began work to install modification kits needed for upcoming upgrades to the solar array. They spacewalked for more than 7 hours and worked on some of the station's oldest and worn solar wings. The new, more efficient solar panels are increasingly necessary to power a station that houses more people and a growing number of experiments. The new panel should boost electrical capacity by 30%, and SpaceX is set to deliver all six of them this year, just in time to welcome European astronaut Samantha Cristoforetti. The Italian is one of only two women the ESA has ever sent to space. She also set a then record for the longest single female space flight when, from 2014 to 2015, she flew for almost 200 consecutive days. Cristoforetti is scheduled to go back to the ISS in 2022. Finally this week, a fireball lit the sky over Hervey Bay, Queensland. A professor at the University of Southern Queensland said it was a piece of a rocket that launched a Chinese satellite in 2019. NASA says more than 15,000 hunks of space junk were cataloged orbiting Earth as of November 2020. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
After a year of protests and quarantine closures, some shops across America have been boarded up and the plywood used as a canvas by artists and protesters. Natasha Moskovaya reports from Seattle on what will happen to what many see as protest art depicting an important part of U.S. history.
In the heart of Seattle's Capitol Hill neighborhood, graffiti and murals cover walls and pieces of plywood guarding shop windows. The largest display for mass protests last summer includes the words Black Lives Matter painted on the road. It stretches for the whole block on East Pine Street.
Painted the L, love, legacy, life.
15 local artists collaborated on this, each bringing their unique style to the project.
For myself, I do a self-portrait that's a shark, sunflower, like octopus tentacles. It's more or less like everyone sees my personality is very bright, very fun, but I'm a crazy person. And then, of course, the main attraction is the beautiful black women. I like to depict them kind of as giants or goddesses, because as a black man, they've been a very big, pivotal part of my life.
The mural, painted at the height of summer protests sparked by the death of George Floyd, has been called the symbol of free speech and civil rights. To preserve it, Seattle's Arts and Culture Office joined the artists and the city's Department of Transportation to get the work fully repainted.
The time we did it was more of a street art graffiti kind of thing where we didn't really ask permission, we just took claim. The second time around, it was definitely a mural. We got paid, we're going to make sure this is done right.
For some letters, it took as many as 5 layers of paint to ensure it can withstand street conditions. The process was a moment of collaboration as the city, which was the focus of protesters' frustrations at times, reconfigured the road and added traffic diverters to protect the mural.
So it's supposed to stay for about 5 years, but I'm hoping it stays forever. I hope it becomes a part of Seattle culture, and I'm reminding that we really need to take black lives seriously, not for granted. They're just like, we're just like you.
This mural belongs to the people. This mural belongs to the artists. We're just there to offer our assistance and resources.
The city code requires small business owners to either clean up graffiti on their property or face fines. In the spontaneous outburst of protest art, though, it is not always clear where the line between vandalism and art is.
We do know that, you know, we should at least preserve some of these murals that have been created on businesses and try and do our best to, you know, to preserve this, because, you know, it's one of those moments in history that you want to capture and preserve to sort of, you know, show what we went through as a culture, as a country.
That plywood belongs to the owner of that business and or building in most cases. And so it's up to them on what, if they want to donate it or they want to keep it themselves. But the main goal is preservation, to tell the story and remember this moment in history.
Not all Seattle residents remember the protests as something to be celebrated. There were acts of violence and destruction by some of the protesters, leading to clashes with police as authorities attempted to regain control over the rioting. A large patch of bulldozed soil in Callanderson Park is all that is left of a self-declared autonomous zone, the CHOP, created by the protesters. Pieces that were made there are now traveling with activists around Seattle.
This is one of the black fists that was from the CHOP art. And then we have about, I want to say close to like 200 pieces of plywood from the boards and barricades that were in the CHOP. I was actually arrested trying to stop the CHOP art from being taken from the CHOP. So I feel very, I'm very passionate about this.
Today, most of the protesters' camp artwork is in a storage facility and is subject to an ownership dispute between the protest veterans. As for the plywood murals, some shop owners plan to display them, return them to the artists, or donate them to local nonprofits and museums. Natasha Moskovaya, VOA News, Seattle.
That's our program for today. Thanks for joining us on VOA Asia. Continue online on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, all at VOA Asia. We extend our thanks to those who help bring this program to you every day: our managing editor, Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.